Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. Today I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and, down the line from Scotland, Katie Balls. Today, Labour launched its manifesto. This is a big moment in the campaign. If Labour is going to have any chance of denying the Tories a majority, they need to get a boost out of their manifesto, as they did in 2017. And Fraser, I think it's fair to say that they have thrown the kitchen sink at it. It is hard to see a populist left-wing policy that isn't in this manifesto.
Yes, I think this is a kind of greatest hits of left-wing populism. I mean, I'll say this for the Labour Party. They're very honest about what they're doing. They're very intellectually coherent. And they promise radical transformative manifesto that will issue full cask-strength socialism, and that's exactly what this delivers. The ambition is really quite remarkable. I mean, set aside the kind of £80 billion worth of taxes that are going to have to come from somewhere. You've got the nationalisation of the rail, of water, of electricity, of the broadband. You've got the planned punishments for companies who are not deemed to be green enough. They're going to be kicked off London Stock Exchange. Even companies who are green enough are going to have a 10% of their shareholdings confiscated by this government without any compensation. You've got other, you know, really quite radical policies as well. Four new bank holidays, that's obviously going to cost the economy. You're going to, and the language strikes me most of all. It's this isn't a sort of, this is a great country, let's make it even better. What they describe is a Britain which is literally, to use Jeremy Corbyn's language from the leaders' debate, made up of billionaires and poor people, no middle ground. So the purpose of a Labour government will be to avenge on behalf of the poor people. It will be take money, to take power, to basically beat up on the large corporations. And there's also a kind of hint of green Marxism here as well, that instead of talking about the wicked capitalists, they talk about the big polluters with whom the Tories are apparently in cahoots. So you've got a very clear, very radical, what you see is what you get manifesto. Jeremy Corbyn said that people are trying to stop him because they know that he is really serious about this and he will really implement it. I, for one, believe him. But my biggest concern about this is that if he were to do it, it would destruct the progressive goals he sets out. It would mean far less money taken from rich people. It would mean far fewer opportunities for young students. It would mean far more income inequality. In fact, we're in the strange situation where the biggest threat to Labour values is now the current Labour manifesto.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? Katie, is this going to work? Is this going to kickstart the Labour election campaign?
Well, I've been out with Labour activists, it's now the afternoon, this lunchtime, walking around Glasgow, and now they would say that, but I definitely think that there is a sense that if they can try and repeat the trick of 2017, which is to get people talking about domestic policies, then they're in much safer territory, and that they do think that this is a type of radical agenda which is going to get them that level of attention. But I think what was interesting is, yes, in many ways it is radical, but there are also some things that are perhaps not so radical. So if you look, for example, on free movement, there's been a big debate in the Labour Party. You had Labour members at conference saying the party should proudly pledge for this to continue. It doesn't get much of a mention in terms of the manifesto. The party says free movement will be subject to negotiations if the UK leaves the EU. Nothing else. So, and I think also if you look at, you know, carbon emissions, again, you start to see that although this is definitely a manifesto which I suppose those on the Tory side would see as rather out there, in terms of what the membership want, I don't think it goes as far as some members did want.
Now, Fraser, there's some fascinating polling today in The Times by Theresa May's former pollster, James Johnson, and that suggests that voters just don't think any of this in the Labour manifesto is going to happen, that Labour are not going to be capable of actually delivering it. Do you think that is going to be the public's reaction, which is, you know, all well and good, but you won't actually be able to do this?
Yes, I think you're basically asking a whole country to believe in the tooth fairy with this manifesto, and they don't. Now, we'll have seen opinion polling, I've referred to it on these podcasts, saying if people are asked, do you agree with nationalisation of rail industry, of water, a whole bunch of people, the majority, will say yes. Individually, these policies can be popular. But the very important question is the one you highlight. Do you think this would actually happen? Do you think that Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party could pull off an agenda of this staggering scope? And they just don't think it would work. Understandably so. I mean, you're going to, what, free bus travel for under 25s, abolishing student tuition fees, massive increase in the minimum wage. I mean, you cannot do all this without massive tax rises and really hurting the engine of economic growth. And people haven't forgotten that. So I think, fundamentally, Labour is asking the country to suspend its disbelief in the same way that people who spend their lives in politics are quite good at suspending disbelief. I mean, seizing the shareholdings of people without any compensation for it, that just isn't done in democracies. Well, it was done in, I guess, Venezuela, but the Bolivarian model, I don't think, is going to have much traction here. Now, you will get a bunch of people who will think, well, it doesn't matter, the system is failing, I want to smash up the system. And that is quite prevalent. I mean, Katie's in Scotland right now, where people were told that they voted for independence, that would smash up the system. Lots of people thought, great, the system needs smashed. So I don't think these practical concerns will stop everybody from voting Labour. But I do think that the picture that Jeremy Corbyn has painted today is simply not credible and will probably fail as a result.
Katie, you were saying that this manifesto doesn't go far enough for some Labour activists, but do you think this is going to be enough to kind of put some energy into the Labour campaign? One thing I was struck by was just before we started recording this podcast, I was talking to a Tory, how are we meant to refer to them now? To kind of Tory, someone who was a Tory MP in the last Parliament who'd been campaigning for colleagues of his in marginal seats, and he just said, one of the differences from 2017 is the left doesn't seem energised in the same way that it was then. Do you think this is gonna? Do you think this is gonna kind of get the Labour activist base out?
Yeah, I do think there are some parts that will, and I think there are things here. I suppose red meat isn't really the right term when you're talking about what gets Labour activists going, but ultimately there are parts which I think are going to get them quite energised. I think one of the things which has received some criticism is one of their big foreign policy pledges is this review of colonial legacy. Now, that is something which I've heard some activists say they think is a very good idea and something they want to go out and get on the doorstep talking about. I think there are also just some things which, if you look, for example, that this idea that ATM charges would be banned. Now, I don't think that's a visionary policy, but you can see how that would be quite a popular policy and quite an easy thing to sell if you think about, I suppose, takeaways you're going to get from this. But ultimately, you had a big radical policy from Labour on Friday, which was the broadband Wi-Fi pledge. But that did, in a way, start to get bumped off the news agenda by things like Prince Andrew. The conversation started to go back, I think, more to what the Conservatives wanted to talk about when you had the debate. I think, can they keep the momentum and keep the focus on their policies? I think, broadly speaking, they're going to be quite happy with how this is landing so far. But ultimately, in the coming days, we've got the more television debates. We have the Tories, waiting to put theirs out. And I think the question is, can they keep a level of attention that is required on these various policies?
The other big development in the action is the kind of pivot in the Lib Dem position. They started this campaign talking about how Jo Swinson was a candidate for Prime Minister, how they intended to form a majority government. They are now saying, Fraser, in effect, vote for us to deny Boris Johnson a majority. This pivot is in some ways a recognition of reality, but do you think it's going to work? I mean, because one of the stories of this campaign so far is how the Lib Dems have been squeezed.
No, I don't think it's going to work. And to be honest, I'm a little bit concerned about this. The Lib Dem surge is certainly helpful if you're keen on the Labour vote being split. Now, what's happened is Jo Swinson has tried a pretty weird strategy, claiming that she's going to be Prime Minister in a way that none of her predecessors did. Obviously, that insults the intelligence of voters. And she's had pushback, and now she's given up on that. So we can see the Lib Dems flailing a bit. Now, I know that there are several Tory seats that are going to go to the Lib Dems because of Remain. But by and large, it rather suits those who don't want Corbyn to be Prime Minister to see the Lib Dems doing reasonably well and taking away Labour votes. So I don't get any sort of schadenfreude out of the Lib Dems' current misery. Is proving a very difficult campaign for Jo Swinson, actually. And funny, she became leader after the Lib Dem surge. Since then, the party's support has gone down. So it's quite often people make the mistake of thinking, well, the Lib Dems were doing dreadfully, then Jo Swinson came along and then they did brilliantly. Now, she has been the beneficiary of the Remain vote aligning behind the then leaderless Lib Dems. And since then, under her, they found it more difficult.
Katie, Jo Swinson is obviously an MP for a Scottish seat. Are the Lib Dems getting a boost out of that up in Scotland?
So going purely on anecdotal evidence, if we can call it that, I was interested last night when I was doing some research in a pub in Glasgow.
Best place to do it.
In the name of The Spectator. And what I have picked up from talking to various voters around Glasgow, which is very near to Jo Swinson's seat, is the revoke policy does seem to be putting some people off. I think that it is viewed as a fairly extreme measure. And I'm not picking up, I suppose, you know, a Liberal Democrat surge when you're talking to people. And often I've followed now a Conservative MP out on the doorstep, I followed a Labour MP out on the doorstep, and one of the things you keep hearing is, I don't think anyone feels particularly enthusiastic about any single party. They keep saying, well, I don't like this person, I suppose I maybe dislike your person the least, so I might give you my vote. But you don't get the sense that there is perhaps Liberal Democrats on paper, I think you would think, when you're hearing about people who don't like Brexit but they want to stay in the UK, you would think the Liberal Democrats would be the right party for them, but I haven't sensed that level of surge, really. And I think what's tricky for the Liberal Democrats is they've always known that they are going to get squeezed in this election campaign. There's clearly the problem when you're the third party, or in this case, technically the fourth, if you think about the SNP. But I don't think they've yet worked out how Jo Swinson can almost get momentum and go back. And it's a very Jo Swinson-heavy campaign if you look at what they're doing. And is she chiming with the public? When we had James Morris on the podcast earlier this week, the focus groups, and he was saying a lot of people don't know who she is, and probably worse, the ones that do don't have a particularly positive impression. Now, she does have a few big opportunities, I think, to turn things around and redefine her party and get that stake back up in terms of the voter share. Because you have Jo Swinson doing the Question Time leader special, you also have one-on-one interviews, and you have the big leaders debate with lots of different parties in. So I think there is still time for her campaign to get back on track, but it's just very difficult working out. I mean, is it a wasted vote? And I think that's one thing that's going through lots of voters' minds. And that's why Jo Swinson needs to explain, is it just to dilute a Tory government? Because if people really don't want a Tory government, perhaps then they would just vote for Labour. And I think that's what needs working on. And as Fraser says, ultimately, the Tories do need the Liberal Democrats to be doing okay. Obviously, in some seats, they would like the Liberal Democrats to do badly, but broadly speaking, the biggest problem for the Tories is if the Remain vote is united.
I thought it was very striking, the Ipsos Mori poll out today. Another poll showing a big Tory lead, but I think if you were the Tories, one of the things that would concern you is that the Lib Dems are at 16% in that poll, but only 40% of people currently planning to vote Lib Dem are certain that they will do so. That makes it by far the softest party vote in this election. And if you saw that a big chunk of that Lib Dem vote moving to Labour, that would make this election, that would pose some challenges to the Tories in terms of getting a majority. Now, Katie, we're going to have to tread rather carefully when discussing this, but you're up in Scotland, and I couldn't not ask you about this. How big news up there, Alex Salmond appearing in court today and the list of charges against him being released?
Well, look, I think on this, it's clearly going to have a... There's a view on the Conservative side that this is going to be damaging to the SNP. I mean, we've had news this morning in detailing the various allegations, but I haven't yet heard it brought up by voters when MPs have been knocking on doors as an issue. I think that the Conservatives at least think this is going to feed into this, anti-SNP narrative, and they think it is going to undermine the SNP. But the question is the pace of that. And ultimately, one of the reasons I think the SNP were keen to have an early election, even though in the end they didn't actually vote for one, they just put an amendment down. I think one of the reasons was the fact that this trial obviously takes place in the spring, and they think that the damage will be minimised if you have the election, I suppose, before Christmas. So I think it's a question of timing. I think it is going to, there is a view that it will be explosive, but it's just, does that detonate before a Christmas election? And if they can push it off. I think that's what they expect to be the case, and perhaps it will be more damaging post-election.
I guess the SNP are slightly protected in that under the, you know, the reporting restrictions in Britain, you can't really discuss criminal charges once they've been announced. So people can say what Alex Salmond is accused of, but other than that...
And we should stress that he pleads not guilty to these charges.
Yeah, and caveats like that, quite right, will basically stop this really being weaponised during the campaign. For a long time, people have pointed to the Alex Salmond situation and said, will this hurt the SNP? I don't think it will for an election held in December, and that's one of the reasons I think that the SNP did want this early election, because it is literally legally impossible to draw any comment on this trial at this stage.
Katie, we'll let you get back to doing some more research in the hostelries of Glasgow. And Fraser, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow and to see how that Labour manifesto has landed. Thank you so much.